time. Self-excitatory, to quote Wheeler, the universe is a grand synthesis, putting itself together all the time as a whole. Its history is not a history as we usually conceive history. It is not one thing happening after another after another. It is a totality in which what happens now gives reality to what happens then, perhaps even determines what happened then. In the quantum realm, the time ordering of events is without meaning, a mistaken way of speaking. Wheeler writes, "There is no such thing as space-time in the real world of quantum physics. With time gone, the very idea of before and after all lose their meaning. There is no linear time in the original quantum formalism. There is no explanation of how one moment becomes the next, because there is only one moment in quantum physics, the moment of observation." To quote Einstein, "People like us who believe in physics know that the distinction between past, present, and future is only a stubbornly persistent illusion." It is an unexamined assumption that time can be defined entirely in terms of the behavior of clocks. The notion of time as a linear sequence of moments is a deeply ingrained assumption symptomatic to our classically conditioned way of thinking. It is easy to fall under the false imagination that a timeline of moments from the past to the future actually exists, and that the present moment is just a single point on this long timeline. We are always at the moment of observation, which is the singular present moment, the only moment that has ever existed, where all the action of creation takes place. There are no other lived moments except in our imagination, which is the very place that the notion of time is conceived. Summing up the current worldview emerging from the new physics, Wheeler simply says, "Time, today, is in trouble." The notion of time emerging from quantum physics has a distinct teleological feel to it. In Wheeler's terms, it is teleology without teleology. As a self-excited universe, time gets turned on its head. It's not just the past causing the present, but the future causing the present too. This enlarges the idea of linear causality in that it implies that the effect is not only produced by a cause, but that the effect can also precede the cause. It is as if enfolded within the present moment are not only traces of the past that are informing it, but also the potentiality of the future that is influencing it as well. No moment exists on its own. The present can be envisioned as a seed in which the past and future creatively intermingle. Out of the present sprouts the results of the past, while concurrently being drawn into the possibilities inherent in the future, which could be said to be causing the present moment as much as the past does. The present moment is like a magical doorway in which the past and future come together in a radial matrix via their mutual informing of the present. In talking about the past and the future, it is important not to reify them, since this makes it easy to forget that they are just constructs made up by the mind. It is an error to think of the past or future as distinct from the present moment, as the idea of past or future is never experienced separate from the present moment. Stepping and relaxing into the present moment, where we all are right now, and releasing our habitual and chronic contraction against it, spontaneously introduces us to our true creative nature. This idea, called retrocausality, implies a symmetrical treatment of time in which both past and future events can play a role in informing the present moment to happen the way it does. Such a perspective collapses our notion of sequential time as always flowing in one direction, that is, from the past to the future, as it allows causal movement in two directions simultaneously. The present moment, the point where our power to shape reality is to be found, is the place where the handshake completing this transaction between the past and the future happens. Wheeler comments, "There is no more remarkable feature of this quantum world than the strange coupling it brings about between future and past." To quote Einstein, "Time is not at all what it seems. It does not flow in only one direction, and the future exists simultaneously with the past." From the point of view that takes linear time as unassailably true, Einstein's words make no sense. Quantum physics requires us to step into a radically new way of thinking about time. Wheeler writes, "Heaven did not hand down the word time. Man invented it." Time is a human-made construct built so as to order our experience. To quote physicist N. David Merman, Clocks do not measure some pre-existing thing called time. Our concept of time is simply a convenient way to abstract the common behavior of all those objects we call clocks. Time in itself does not exist in a fundamental, absolute sense as an entity or external parameter that can be measured in a way that physical things can be measured in the third dimension, but is an abstraction constructed by the mind. Time is a mental construct. Time in and of itself cannot be found in the three-dimensional material world. Rather, it is to be found within the domain of our minds. Time is a qualitative aspect of our consciousness that we pretend to quantify and measure with clocks. Our erroneous linear conception of time infects both our thinking and our language, which is to say it deranges our mind, not to mention our global civilization as a whole, as is evidenced all around us. As Wheeler writes, time is anything but simple. He asks, is everything, including time, built from nothingness by acts of observer participancy? In a situation where the psyche and the quantum realm seem to be mirroring each other, Jung says, we cannot apply our notion of time to the unconscious. Our consciousness can conceive of things only in temporal succession. Our time is, therefore, essentially linked to the chronological sequence. In the unconscious, this is different, because there, everything lies together, so to speak. We are left standing in the shadow cast by a future of which we still know nothing, but which is already somehow anticipated by the unconscious. It is as if all possible universes exist in potential in the unconscious of humanity, and which one will actualize itself into form depends on how we engage with the unconscious. In other words, how we dream it. Compare Jung's idea that in the unconscious everything lies together to physicist Louis de Broglie's words, each observer, as his time passes, discovers, so to speak, new slices of space-time which appear to him as successive aspects of the material world, though in reality, the ensemble of events constituting space-time exist prior to his knowledge of them. The underlying space-time continuum of the plenum, or the collective unconscious of humanity, depending upon if we are talking as a physicist or psychologist, is like a cauldron, an overflowingly full maternal womb out of which all events in our world, be they big or small, inner or outer, exist in a state of potential, preparing themselves to inner manifestation as living experiences. The arena in which these potential events are actualized is the interfacing of our third-dimensional universe of space and time with our minds. Contemplating the whole fabric of space-time, Wheeler, noting that we are not limited to moving in space in only one direction, wonders, why do we seem to move through time as if it were a one-way street? Why does time have an arrow? Why do we remember the past but not the future? As Lewis Carroll writes, it's a poor sort of memory that only works backwards. Sometimes Wheeler felt that an idea seemed so crazy that it just might be right. Contemplating the direction of time, he wrote, one direction might be quite likely, the other direction incredibly, ridiculously unlikely, yet unlikely is not quite the same as impossible. An infinitesimally small or non-zero probability is radically different than something that is impossible. We should be very careful what we assign to the trash bin of the impossible. In his typical far-out way, Wheeler wonders whether built into the fabric of our minds is the capacity in which the old past is remembered less well than the immediate future. Regarding the so-called past, Wheeler writes, ah, but what has already happened is not so easy to say. Talking about one of the most startling features of a radical thought experiment based on a cosmic version of the famous double-slit experiment that he dreamed up called the delayed choice experiment, which has since been empirically verified. The act of observation, Wheeler says, reaches back into the past in apparent opposition to the normal order of time. Wheeler's thought experiment used the imagination creatively in order to tease out a little more information from nature. He discovered that a choice made in the here and now has irretrievable consequences for what one has the right to say about what has already happened in the very earliest days of the universe, long before there was any life on Earth. This is to say that acts of observer participancy in this moment give tangible reality to the universe not only now, but back at its beginning. In an interview, Wheeler expressed this idea very simply. We are participators in bringing into being not only the near and here, but the far away and long ago. This is not far-out science fiction, but hard science that is actually stranger than fiction. To quote cosmologist and astrophysicist Martin Rees, in the beginning, there were only probabilities. The universe could only come into existence if someone observed it. It does not matter that the observers turned up several billion years later. The universe exists because we are aware of it. Though what the delayed choice experiment is revealing to us seems utterly paradoxical, this is only because we are still unconsciously caught in a pre-quantum viewpoint. There is no paradox in the delayed choice experiment if we let go of the idea that there is a fixed and independent physical world that exists even when we are not observing it. Wheeler comments, "It is wrong to think of that past as already existing in all detail. The past is theory. The past has no existence except as it is recorded in the present. By deciding what questions our quantum registering equipment shall put in the present, we have an undeniable choice in what we have the right to say about the past." In other words, the questions we ask today, in Wheeler's words, form an inseparable part of a phenomenon that in earlier thinking, one would have said had already happened. The idea that some event has already happened is a remnant of our classically conditioned minds. From the point of view of quantum physics, the seemingly past event that we think of as already having happened has not really happened until it is observed, whenever that occurs. The act of observation that helps to actualize the past only takes place in the present, which is to say that the present moment, in a very real sense, encompasses and is inseparable from the past. Wheeler points out that the question, "What was the reality of, for example, the photon, before it is observed?" is an utterly meaningless question. Our observation in the here and now has an undeniable impact in bringing about that which appears to have happened. The past is never finished once and for all. Classical physics describes the present as having a particular past. Quantum physics, on the other hand, because of its probabilistic nature, enlarges the arena of human history such that the past is an amalgam of all possible pasts compatible with the version of the present moment we are currently experiencing. The quantum universe is polyhistorical. The past involves a wide range of possible pasts, all coexisting in a state of unmanifest potential. Wheeler writes that there is no unique history that one can ascribe to the universe. Instead, there is a certain probability of this, that, and the other history of the universe. The act of observation collapses the wave function, a mathematical construct that describes all of the system's possible states, in such a way as to evoke a particular universe in the present moment while simultaneously reaching backwards in time to create a history appropriate with our present moment experience. To quote physicists Stephen Hawking and Leonard Mlodinow, co-authors of The Grand Design, "We create history by our observations, rather than history creating us." There is no way to say unambiguously what the past was really like until we know its future in the form of the present. As in a work of art, each part of the universe acquires its full meaning only in its relation to the whole. Hawking and Mlodinow write, "Quantum physics tells us that no matter how thorough our observation of the present, the unobserved past, like the future, is indefinite and exists only as a spectrum of possibilities. The universe, according to quantum physics, has no single past or history. The fact that the past takes no definite form means that observations you make on a system in the present affect its past. In any case, in quantum physics, it certainly appears as if an observation made in the present moment reaches back and influences the past." Wheeler writes, "Our very act of measurement not only revealed the nature of the photon's history on its way to us, but in some sense determined that history. The past history of the universe has no more validity than is assigned by the measurements we make now." Through our observations in this moment, Wheeler writes, "We decide what the photon shall have done after it has already done it." The connection between the observer and the observed not only cannot be separated in space, but has no distinction in time as well. This perspective turns our conception of linear time and causality on its head. To quote author Graham Smetham, "The entire universe appears to be a kind of collective delayed choice experiment in which inhabiting sentient beings somehow determine the manifested nature of the universe, even backwards in time." This introduces a self-referential circularity in which the laws of quantum physics can allow for their own self-modification backwards in time. The implication is that, as observers, we are participants in the genesis of the universe, a process that Wheeler calls genesis by observership. The moment of the world's creation lies in the present, in the eternal now, with us somehow playing a starring role. Wheeler writes, "We don't understand Genesis, and we never will until we rise to an outlook that transcends time." Classical physics was of the opinion that if it had sufficient information, it could predict how the universe would unfold in the future. After the discoveries of quantum physics, Bohr, doing his best Woody Allen impersonation, allegedly said, "It is difficult making predictions, especially about the future." With the advent of quantum physics, however, the whole of science had suffered a dimly perceived, yet drastic, fundamental, and sobering change. In quantum physics, to quote Wheeler, "Prediction comes to the end of the road." Speaking of science, physicist Banesh Hoffman, an associate of Einstein, writes, "Its proudest boast, its most cherished illusion has been taken away from it. It had suddenly grown old and wise. It had at last realized it never had possessed the ability to predict the detailed future. To predict the future, we must fully know the present, and the present is not fully knowable. For not only, as Heisenberg pointed out, is there always an element of uncertainty in trying to ascertain complete knowledge of any system, but in trying to know whatever present universe we inhabit, we inevitably alter it. This results in liberating us from the deterministic straitjacket, the linchpin of classical physics, that seemed to have been constraining us." According to quantum theory, the best way to predict the future is to invent it ourselves. Welcome to the world of quantum physics.